The drive to go further and reach higher. The same thing that inspires you inspires us. At Strayer University, we're always searching for new ways to make education more affordable. That's why we offer access to up to 10 no-cost gen ed courses to help you save time and money so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. No-cost gen eds provided by Strayer University affiliates of Fuel Learning. Eligibility rules apply. Connect with us for details. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.
This is the Seahawkers Podcast, quick reaction show for the Seahawks and the Panthers. Seattle gets the 30-27 victory on the road, their second to last road game of the season. I'm joined by my good buddy, Adam Emmert.
Yeah, man, the Seahawks really exposed a problem in my life today, and that's that I don't have a healthcare plan that can cover the types of stress that they put on my body and my mind. Like, unbelievably stressful game, a really cool game with the way that it all turns out, because it turns out you win it in the fourth quarter when you got the clutchiest QB in the NFL who's found his clutch again, Russell Carrington Wilson, that's our quarterback, leading us back in the second half. And the Seahawks come away with a win that I think, Brandon, I don't like to make too much of wins or losses throughout the season, but there's a few of those occasionally that pop up that feel season defining. Like in that 2012 season, the game against the Bears, Russell Wilson ended Brian Urlacher's career. This game right here, this feels like a season defining game that we look back at the end of the year and go, that's when it all clicked.
It does, because holy smokes, this game could have gone both ways. And yeah, I'm having a little bit of trouble calming down a little bit after that game. I got my nice Pinky Inn beer, you know, the where it just says generic beer right on the label. To kind of come down a little bit after this game, because I couldn't even get up off the couch to get one during the game.
No, I'm glad you said it was okay to start drinking now, because I generally make it a rule. I don't start drinking before 5, and these early games kill me, like, just because of situations like this where it's back and forth. It's that even matchup that we talked about. I go back to the last pod, Brandon, and the way we broke that down, and we both had ideas of how this game would go. And I mean, I'm just saying we were really right.
It was really close, because we talked about turnovers and you talked about Graham Gano and what happened in the closing minutes. Graham Gano misses a 52-yard field goal. The Seahawks get the ball back. Russell Wilson on third down. Third down was huge. Russell Wilson had some huge plays on third down in this game. He goes down the field to Tyler Lockett, gets inside the red zone, and they're able to just milk the clock down to 4 seconds and get Seabass on the field to kick the game winner.
I think it was DeMore, was it not? Or was it to Lockett?
Lockett was that one. No, the other clutch third down was the one in the... Well, that wasn't even a third down. That was a fourth down where it was fourth and three.
And they went
to Moore in the back of the end zone. Yeah, so both Moore and Lockett had some big clutch plays in this game.
We also talked about the idea that this game is so even that it could come down to special teams and which quarterback makes the game-defining plays and doesn't make the big mistake. I mean, Carolina was trying to give us the ball all dang game, but
five,
we could not.
Fumbles by Carolina, zero recoveries by the Seahawks.
We could not be bothered to take our hands out and grab the balls that were on the ground. Like,
even the
we couldn't
one,
do that.
Even the one that went right into Bobby Wagner's breadbasket. Somehow Carolina comes up with that football.
Yeah, there was a stretch there in the second quarter where you're just like, good Lord, like we can't get the ball to bounce our way at all. But Cam Newton, fortunately, decides to force one into the end zone at one point during the game. Bradley McDougald coming up with a huge pick. I mean, that was one of the few stops that we had all day.
Early on in the third quarter, and that really was a big difference in this game, right? The Seahawks defense definitely struggled with the Carolina Panthers. And really, you know, Christian McCaffrey, 11 catches on 11 targets, 114 yards. He had 125 yards rushing on 17 carries, a 159-yard rush that was, you know, right after the Seahawks tied it up 20-20 with 9.5 minutes left. McCaffrey breaks off that long run and then nearly gets it in on the next play. And ultimately, he's the one that scores to put him up 27-20. So the defense having a lot of trouble. but it was inside the red zone where they were able to hold them to field goals instead of touchdowns in some situations. They got them to go for it on fourth down. They got a fourth down stop that turned the ball over early, allowed them to flip field position back. So Carolina had to drive another 65 yards, and they were able to get that interception by McDougal, like you mentioned.
One of the big things that we focused on the last show was the idea that they're going to hit Christian McCaffrey with a swing pass out of the backfield. They're going to do that. They're going to do that. And that's the biggest bugaboo of this defense for the last 2-3 years. There's a check down to the freaking back. And basically they ran their entire offense through that the second half, and it couldn't be stopped. As far as what McCaffrey produced on the ground, the majority of it came on the one run. Fine. But the amount of receptions out of the backfield was absolutely maddening. We all knew where the ball was going, and yet somehow we couldn't have somebody or two people on him at all times. Make Samuel beat you, make Moore beat you, make Greg Olsen beat you, but just don't let McCaffrey beat you. And yet couldn't be bothered in the second half. But thank goodness the offense made their adjustments at halftime and came out and scored, I believe, on every possession.
Right. Starting in the third quarter, they got the touchdown to Tyler Lockett, the one that was called, for whatever reason, it was called a down on the one, just inside the 1 yard line when Lockett was clearly in the end zone. The ball had clearly, the ball actually, the nose of the football as he was going down came down right on the goal line. So I don't know how the officials missed that one.
Well, I thought he was a little short. And then they showed the replay. I was like, oh, geez, yeah, he was totally in.
Well, the official, he's a significantly closer distance to the play. He should be able to see that.
But they got it right in the end.
They got it right in the end, right. Then the Seahawks get a field goal responding to the touchdown from the Panthers. The Panthers respond back with another touchdown after our field goal. Then Russell Wilson hits David Moore on 4th and 3 in the back of the end zone for a 35-yard touchdown. Carolina drives back down and they miss a field goal. And so every possession, because the Seahawks get the ball back and kick a field goal. So scoring on every possession in the second half, they get 13 points in the fourth quarter, 7 points in the third quarter, end up getting the win 30-27.
It's crazy. But if you look back, 7 out of the last 8 games, the Seahawks have scored 27 or more points. The offense is really putting it together going down the stretch. We've talked about it a few times on the show. 30 is the magic number. We kept the Panthers below 30 and we won.
Right.
Because the offense is putting up close to 30 points every single game. A lot of that comes down to just the commitment to Chris Carson. Chris Carson, the gymnast, the amazing acrobat, the man from the Matrix, the man who can do a complete flip while running the ball and then carry strug the landing. He strugged it.
He did it was like a superhero landing, with the fist on the ground and the one knee. It was incredible. Dude,
I think the closest thing I've seen to that was there was a Bengals receiver that jumped and did a full flip
into the end zone.
Didn't hit anybody into the end zone and stuck it. I can't remember who that was. I want to say it was somebody with the last name Jones.
Something generic.
But it crazy play by Chris Carson. I look back at this game, Brandon, and some of the little things that I see that made a huge difference. We talked about the difference in quarterbacks making the right play at the right time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Special teams. And then you look at the coaching matchup head to head, and thank you, Ron Rivera. When they went for it on fourth down on that, was it the first possession or second possession? I think it was the first possession.
It was their first possession, right?
And when they went for it, remember in the last game when Aaron Rodgers was standing on the field with his hands on his hips, looking at the sideline, being like, don't you dare take me off this field. And Mike McCarthy called him out the field. And I was like, thank goodness. I didn't want him to go for it there, right? Well, in that moment, when he starts keeping the offense out on the field, Ron Rivera, I'm looking at the screen. I'm like, okay, great.
Yeah, let's do this.
Yes, please. Yeah. Yeah, so great decision there on his part. And by great decision, I mean crappy. And then the second decision I think was huge in this game is on the Panthers' last possession. They had a second down and 7. It was their basically second to last play. And instead of just running the ball again, I think they ran a draw with Cam on the first play. And then instead of running the ball again, chose to pass.
Right.
And there's pressure. Cam has to throw it out of bounds, saves us a timeout, stops the clock, leaves so much more time for Russell Wilson and company. And I mean, two huge blunders by Ron Rivera, in my judgment.
Right, because then you're able to use the timeout right before their field goal attempt. Give Gano a little bit extra time to think about it. You stop the clock because he did throw it to Moore there for 3 yards on third down. So able to stop the clock there. And yeah, and then he misses it. And thank goodness.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, a long field goal. I mean, it was 50 plus. What was it, 52, 53?
It was 52. So, okay. I mean, you can't, if you're a Panthers fan, I mean, you can kind of be mad about it. I'd be mad if Janikowski missed a 52 yarder to win it.
I'd be bummed, but not mad. Okay. Maybe that's the way that I would look at it. Yeah. But really competitive game. I thought the officiating was good, despite some opposite opinions on what pass interference is. But what Shaquille Griffin did to, I don't remember which receiver, in the end zone was absolutely, without question, unequivocally pass interference. Yeah,
you need to look at that again because that was not pass interference. Shaquille Griffin.
I'll break this down to you right quick. He never turns his head. He runs into the receiver and he does it before the ball gets there. That's pass interference every time. And I'd say twice on Sunday, but this was Sunday and they didn't throw the flag twice, but they could have.
From one angle, it did look like he hit him. From the other angle, it looked like Griffin did not run into him. He was face guarding him, which the rules have changed now to where you do not have to, you don't have to turn your head around to defend the pass.
He had his hands on him. Before the ball got there. He had his hands on him. He didn't turn around, and he did it before the ball got there. They'll call that every single time. Every single time.
Did they? Because they didn't call it when the dude did it to Moore in the end zone, holding his hands and contacting him on the fourth and three touchdown.
That's a bad call. That's pass interference.
You said they'd call it every time.
Well, they should have gone that one. That's pass interference. Grabs his arm.
Well, be consistent then.
I am.
On the ones that you're going to call every time. I think that was minimal. And Moore did have the opportunity to recover and catch the ball. So I can see him taking it, you know, keeping the flag in the pocket on that one. And I think if that ends up incomplete, they throw the flag on the Shaquille Griffin play too.
If that was incomplete, they would have thrown the flag. No doubt about it. But he caught it, so he didn't have to.
A deep pass like that on fourth down, I don't think they do it. I don't think
that was absolutely pass interference. There's no other argument for it, but here's the thing. You actually have a solid argument.
Okay. Well, we can get past it and move on.
Yeah. It doesn't matter because we freaking won.
We did win. So let's, why complain about officiating, especially when we win? Third down conversions for the Seahawks, almost at that magical 50% number. They're 6 of 13. Carolina held to 3 of 8 third downs, but the Seahawks 2 of 2 on their fourth down conversions. That was huge.
That was gigantic. The other thing that was gigantic, penalties. The Seahawks were decent with their pre-snap penalties.
They were decent.
They cleaned that up. I think they had one illegal motion
and Fluker had a false start.
Yeah. Yeah. If you get a hold during the play, like, I don't want you to hold. It's a bummer when people hold. Please don't hold. But that's harder. You know what I mean? Like, that's one that I have a little more leniency towards. Oh, yeah.
I don't get too mad about holding.
But gosh dang it. No, the snap count, you know?
Yeah. 4 penalties, 36 yards for the Seahawks. 3 penalties for 30 yards for the Panthers. So they didn't throw the flag a whole lot in this game.
They let them play. They really did. Yeah.
Russell Wilson sacked twice. Cam Newton, not even touched. Well, a big reason why he was 14 of 14 in the first half of that game. Oh, that got my blood boiling a little bit. Cam just having all day on this game.
He didn't need all day. He just would wait for all the receivers to run everybody down the field, and then he'd just check it down to McCaffrey. I mean, that's their entire offense.
Yeah.
Like, great. I could go out there and go 14 for 14 if that were the case. And I might not even throw the pick. So I don't think I could throw it that far. What was that, like 30 yards on a rope?
Yeah.
How much? Who's the play-by-play guy for this game?
Oh, it was Kevin Burkhart and Charles Davis.
Where's Kevin Burkhart from?
Oh, you think he's a little homerish?
You think? Good Lord. The Seahawks are down 3 at the beginning of the second half, and he says something like, if the Seahawks can somehow come back and win this game, blah, 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 blah. Like, he couldn't stop gushing about the Panthers all game. Look at all the yards. Hoodley Hodley. Like, I just, he loves him some Carolina Panthers.
Well, I think he's more of a Jets guy, and Cowboys, it looks like, is where he's had his experience throughout his career.
Well, he's a closet Cam Newton fan.
He might be. And that might be true.
Mine. Yeah,
it's too bad we didn't get to see the towel over the Cam Newton head, but at least we'll be able to tune in to the Cam Newton post-game presser and get a little bit of the experience from that.
Well, we got some pouty face throughout the game. That was fun.
You get plenty of pouty face Cam Newton in a post-game presser after a loss.
Oh, that's always a joy. After he scored that last touchdown and then ran around the field like he was 5 years old and just classless.
Yeah.
It's hilarious because I said something about Barry Sanders to my daughter yesterday. And she's like, Barry who? And I was like, oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh.
I was like, okay. So we sit down. I pull up some YouTube clips. And she was legitimately amazed. She's like, oh, wow. Yeah. I was like, check this out. Watch what happens. And then in the highlight video, whichever one I chose, they actually stopped it like at like three quarters of the way through and played a little section from The Football Life where they talk about, right when I was going to say this, talk about him just handing the ball to the ref and walking off like he'd been there before.
Uh-huh.
You know, like a classy human being. And I was like, yeah, that's what a pro does. What a difference between him and freaking Showboat Cam.
Hey, while we're talking about celebrations, how about the Tyler Lockett touchdown? So they have clearly something planned for the Lockett after the Lockett touchdown, okay. But they have to have it reviewed. Mm-hmm. And then they reenact the Allen Iverson step over.
After, I missed it.
Oh, that we'll see. It was easy to miss because it was coming back after the break. And okay. And so they called it a touchdown and then they went into celebration mode. And Tyler Lockett playing the role of Allen Iverson. And was it Lou?
Yeah, Tyron Lue.
Yeah, Tyron Lue goes to the ground.
The Iverson stopper.
And then Tyler Lockett steps over him. It was pretty sweet.
Well, Ty Lue got the last laugh in that series because they swept him after that. Like I think the Sixers won one game and then they got mushed.
Well, that's okay because they're doing it. They're playing within their own team, so there's no jinxing there.
That's exactly right. So that was cool. How about Tyler Lockett, man? How about the Rocket?
5 targets, 5 catches, 107 yards, and a touchdown, including that 43-yard ba-bomb to help seal the game at the end.
My God, he's everywhere. And I want all the rest of the receiving corps to put on some Tyler Lockett tape, and I want them to observe what he does after he catches the ball. Let's say he's running from the right side of the screen to the left, and the defender's on him. He catches the ball, does a quick pirouette, and just changes direction, right? Mm-hmm. You know what he doesn't do? He doesn't catch the ball, turn his back to the defender, run back 3 steps, and then try to go forward again. Like David Moore, Doug Baldwin, anybody else.
Uh-huh.
The amount of times that our receivers start running backwards drives me nuts.
Yeah.
Run forward! Run forward.
Well, they can take a tip from Lockett and from Vinette, who also had 2 catches, 22 yards in this game. A couple clutch catches, if I remember right. At least one of them was. Yeah. Vinette's kind of been a little bit of a pleasant surprise this year. I mean, he's had touchdown catches where Russell's throwing darts and just able to snag it out of the air. His hands. I don't want to jinx anything with Vinette, but dude has some good hands.
He's been solid in... That's good to see after Will Disley going down earlier in the year. We were kind of looking to hopefully one of those two guys to do a good Zach Miller impersonation. I think they are.
Mm-hmm.
The blocking's been good. I mean, today the run game was a little frustrating only because they couldn't get it generated up the middle.
Yeah.
Everything had to come off tackle. And which is fine. Once they finally figured that out, then you saw Carson breaking that first tackle at the line of scrimmage, you know, going to the outside. And then dragging dudes for like 7-8 yards. I mean, if there was ever a game short of the fumbling thing, and good God, I hope they make him walk around with the ball all week long with people just randomly trying to punch it out all throughout the facility all day and all night.
Mm-hmm.
But short of that, if there wasn't a game that highlighted the difference between Carson, Davis, and Penny, good Lord, there it was.
Carson finishes the day 16 carries, 55 yards. Mike Davis, 4-14. Penny, only 4 yards on 4 carries. Definitely not the defense, I would say. Well, and that would, if they would have been running off tackle, I think, with Penny a little bit early on, maybe they do have some success with him. But and then Lockett with his first carry of the first play of the game, getting tackled for a 2-yard loss. But
they were all over the jet sweep. They had that figured out. 2-3s out. Yeah, 2-3 times.
Yeah, I think the biggest run by Carson would have been coming right after the Panthers gave it up on fourth down, and they hand the ball off to Carson, and he busts it for 15 yards and gave enough room. You know, they didn't get the first down on the next play, but that allowed Michael Dixon to boot it and really change field position again.
Yeah, you were really kind of hoping there at some point in the first half, like, geez, the offense needs to sustain a drive here because Carolina is just jellying it down our throat every drive. And our defense is going to be gassed by the mid second quarter.
I was kind of happy that the Panthers actually put a touchdown up on the board, because I feel like our offense needs to be down by at least 7 before they really start going.
Apparently. I mean,
I don't know why it is.
Russell Wilson just likes playing with the pressure. He just does.
Sure.
I don't know what else there is to point to. I mean, I don't know. Does Shoddy focus more when he gets down? I have no idea.
The visor starts to glow a little bit.
I guess.
When they get down by 7 points.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Guess we better start taking this seriously. But in the second half, you saw them kind of make the realization, too, that the Panthers were all out to stop the run. All out.
Yeah.
And there were opportunities to throw the ball down the field, and Russell Wilson made him pay. I mean, early in the game, they were showing the stats, and they're like, oh, Cam's near 200 yards, and Russ had like 60 or something like that. And, I mean, as meaningless as yards are, guess who finished with more?
Yeah, Russell Wilson, 339 yards at the end of it. Cam Newton, 256.
How many interceptions for Russell?
Zero. Two touchdowns, zero interceptions. Cam, how many two for touchdowns, Cam? One interception.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah.
And you know the other thing that I thought was hilarious? Like, this was another Burkhardt thing. Like, they're talking about the quarterbacks, and they're like, Cam Newton having arguably the best year of his career. I mean, look at the stats. And they pull up the stats. I remember going into the last show, pulling up the stats. I think we even mentioned it. Russ and Cam, like, almost identical. Russ having a little better season to this point. And Cam's having his best season ever.
Even better than the MVP season, huh?
Supposedly. I don't know. Huh. That's just what they said.
Well, Cam did finish with 8 rushes and 63 yards. So if you pile up his rushing yards with his passing yards, they're still about equal.
Yep. He still makes the big mistake. And
I can't think of any bigger mistakes, though, than 5 fumbles and not getting any, though, by Seattle.
How does that work?
I don't know how that happens.
One of it, like, and then not only that, but the special teams play where the ball goes right between his legs.
Doesn't touch it. Yeah, just.
Somehow it doesn't touch him.
How does it not touch him?
I mean, so that's basically like 6.
Yeah.
Potential turnovers that we didn't come up with somehow. Somehow. And like the only one that I really look at and be like, man, like we legitimately should have had that was the one that hit B-Wags in the chest. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of them seemed to bounce like
right to
a Carolina dude.
Every time.
Just like, geez Louise, fumble luck not on our side.
No.
But yet still came away with the victory.
Yeah. What did you think on the other fourth down run where it was 4th and 1? See, they ran Carson on 3rd and 3, which I like the idea of running at 3rd and 3. Carson, early on in the fourth quarter, I thought that he needed to drive rather than go airborne at the end of the run because he had Justin Britt there. He had Ed Dixon there that, you know, if he just keeps driving his legs, maybe those guys can push him across the first down marker. But they go for it on 4th and 1. I was a little bit questionable there being down 20-17 in that situation, but they end up kicking the field goal anyway. Mm-hmm. But they end up getting the first down on 4th and 1. So it really didn't matter too much in the sense of the game. But I thought they should have went ahead and kicked the field goal at that point.
Oh, I was all for it.
Were you?
I was all for
4th and 1.
Yep. Well, only because it didn't feel like the defense was really stopping Carolina. So you're going to need as many points as you can get.
Yeah.
And if you have the opportunity to go for more there, then you go for more. And that was another moment from the broadcast booth where I was like, good Lord with these guys. Like Chris Carson, like clearly gets the first down. Like the ball is absolutely on and a little bit over the yellow line. Boy, I don't think he got it, Charles. Why no? I don't think he did, Kevin. And like go back and forth. And oh, maybe they know. I guess there's nothing to really show that he really didn't, I guess. But I don't know. No, he easily got it.
Yeah.
Like he got it. He actually pushed Keekly back the second best middle linebacker in the game and got it. That's what he did.
After that first down run, they end up having a couple plays. They take a shot at the end zone, a little bit over the head of Moore in the back corner of the end zone. They do have to kick the field goal. Man, there was that throw there, having Moore in the back of the end zone. And then early on in the game, too, was it Baldwin that he overthrew in the end zone? Again, he had Baldwin in the end zone in that Packers game, too.
Yeah, so the Baldwin throw, I look at it, I go, you got to make that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that, but the one to Moore, that was nearly impossible. But the reason why that even happened, and he shouldn't even have been in that situation, because if you notice, before they snapped the ball, the offensive lineman, like almost all of them, has turned around to tell Russ, hey, look at this, look at the edge blitzer, like we got to change protection.
Yeah,
we need something over there. Like they're yelling at him, and Russ just says no and just snaps the ball. And so there's a dude in his face almost immediately, and so that he's got to make that low percentage fade, which he doesn't even throw well to start with. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, that was on Russ. Like, hey, the protection, he didn't call the right protection. I just still can't get over 4th and 3, and you put it up for a however long bomb that was. What was that, 30, 40 yards?
35 yards. Well, I mean, it was 40 yards in the air.
Yeah.
But yeah, 35-yard touchdown by Moore there. I think Russell might have to take the big balls moniker away from Dixon.
Yeah, I mean, that was so reminiscent of the throw in the NFC Championship game, except for he had the offsides on that, so he had the free play to curse, where he throws it on like 4th and 2. I wonder if that falls incomplete and they don't throw a flag.
Yeah.
Like, I can't even imagine the discussion on sports talk radio.
Yeah, there's been some discussion about Russ lately, which
as far as what?
About missing throws. And so,
oh my God, he doesn't throw 100% completion rate every single game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, because there's the Baldwin pass that you say you have to hit. There was the Baldwin pass in the Packers game where you say you have to hit. So, mm-hmm. I mean. But you look at any quarterback.
Aaron Rodgers has to hit a guy on 3rd and 2 on a simple out route.
Yeah, I couldn't do that.
And he darts it.
Yeah.
It happens. All I'm saying is, even the great ones miss a throw here and there. You just don't want them to.
But there would be a lot of
in.
There would be a lot of discussion, though.
Yes, there would.
So we saved us from that.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
And the Seahawks, they're saving us with our postseason predictions early on in the season. Now 6-5, and they jump ahead of the Panthers in the playoff
race. Really confused. Did you just say 6-5?
The Seahawks
They weren't winning even 5 games this year.
Yeah, that's right. I don't even know. Were they supposed to win 4?
I don't know. I don't think so. Yeah, I remember they were terrible.
What did Prisco say? Because I think that's the actual prediction of record.
Picked them, I think he predicted them to go -2 on the year for wins. Somehow.
But yet it's the Seahawks who are 6-5, and it's his Jacksonville Jaguars who are worse. I don't know what their record are. They lost to the Bills, though.
Did they end up losing?
They lost 24-21 to the Bills.
Josh Allen coming back, leading the Bills.
Jacksonville now 3-8 on the season.
Yeah, well, we are 6-5. This next stretch of 3 games, you got to be licking your chops if you're a Seahawks fan. At home against San Fran, then we have the Vikings in Seattle, and then on the road in San Fran. You get those 3, you're sitting at 9-5, 10 wins is right there. You either got to beat the Chiefs or the Cardinals at that point, and I think you're in.
I like the idea of beating one of those teams. I think one of those seems significantly easier than another.
Well, we don't know by the time week 16 comes around for the Chiefs if that game even matters.
No. Well, we don't know who's going to be playing in that game. We don't know what the situation's going to be. It's it's still a little ways off. But yeah, 6-5, the Seahawks now ahead. I guess technically they are behind the Vikings in the standings. But
because of the tie.
5-4-1. Yeah, they're at a 550 winning percentage. The Seahawks at a 545.
It's Vikings pack today, right?
It is. That's the Sunday night game. So go pack.
Dun, dun, da, 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 da. Go, Pack, go. Yes. I'm a huge Aaron Rodgers fan tonight. You bet.
It doesn't necessarily really even matter, though, because they have the ties. So the Seahawks just, they would have to be able, they have to beat the Vikings. See, they're if the Packers win, they're both teams are going to be 5-5.
Right. But on top of that, we have the tiebreaker over the Packers already.
Yeah. Well, which I don't think it'll matter because they have a tie.
Well, they could lose more games going down the stretch.
Yeah, but they're either going to have a better work record
what you're
or
saying.
A worse
okay,
record.
Okay, or very worse. I understand where you're coming from now. Okay.
Unless we end up getting a tie.
I was a little slow there. Okay. I was a little slow there. Yeah.
Yeah. Tie factors in.
That's weird. I'm not accustomed to thinking in half games.
I'm still thinking that you're right, though. I think we do want the Packers to win this game. Having both teams at 5-5 is better than having the Vikings at 6-4 after this week.
I concur. Okay. That seems to be the better
scenario
gig for us. Yeah.
Whew. Yeah.
That was fun. I can't wait to come back next week, tie a bow on this game, and then talk about the San Francisco Felons. I mean, 49ers.
Ooh.
They're not looking great. Are we going to play that Brett Favre light?
Oh, I think so.
Nick Mullins.
I still haven't learned his name yet. I guess we'll do that before the next game.
I watched his first game, and that was fun.
It was. Yeah, he lit it up.
Yeah, it was fun.
But now...
But we'll eat their lunch.
Well, I think Tampa Bay ate his lunch. 18 of 32, 221 yards against Tampa, but...
When Famous Jameis carves you up, you know you're not good.
Yeah. But we will get into that more coming up on this week's show later in the week. Adam, this has been a good week. This has been a good Sunday.
Yeah, this has been a great Sunday. Screw Cam Newton. That was so much fun. I love beating the Panthers because I can't stand that team, that whole organization. I even hate McCaffrey now, like my sports hate from McCaffrey's eye.
Yeah. I'm going to go watch some pouty face Cam Newton press conference now.
Let's do it. All right, man. I can't wait. I'm cracking a beer because you gave me permission.
And with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.